Right now it is time for the Media Beat with David Terechuk. David, of course, joins us on a Friday morning. David has his own website, themediabeat.us. He's also a PBS television correspondent reporting on ethics and belief. And we always love to have David's viewpoint here on a Friday morning. Good morning, David.
Well, hello. It's good to be back with you. And I know you're having technical difficulties today. I appreciate that. I'm glad that you're able to hear me, however, reporting in from New York City, the media capital of the world, as I do most times when I join you. I'm glad to be with you.
It's, you know, we are in an obviously an Alice in Wonderland world. Everything's curiouser and curiouser each day.
Curiouser and curiouser. Couldn't put it better myself.
It's, you know, you look at what's going on with the president and the two senatorial Republican candidates in Georgia and the governor of Georgia, and it almost looks, even though Donald Trump is going to Georgia, I guess today, to campaign for the two Republicans, but it almost looks like Donald Trump is trying to force Georgia into doing something, or he won't give his unbridled support to the candidates. It's almost like a form of blackmail.
Sure. I mean, the relationship between the president and the state of Georgia, which he lost, and he refuses, of course, to accept that he lost, is a trying one, at least, and it's now in a very questionable and difficult situation for both sides of that dispute now, as we go to a special runoff election for Georgia. The strangest thing of all, perhaps, out of all the curious and ever curious goings on from this particular White House, is that Trump, of course, endorsed Republicans in running for office in Georgia, and those selfsame individuals now, in particular the governor and the secretary of state, who had direct responsibility, of course, for running the elections there, are now punchbags for the president. So much so, in fact, that there is now a substantial body of, I'm not sure if I would call it opinion, but certainly thinking of a kind amongst Republicans in Georgia that they should be boycotting this special election because the elections were allegedly by the president, the allegations have been made by the president, that the elections were rigged and not run fairly. And, of course, the Secretary of State is to blame for that, and to some degree, in their thinking anyway, the governor must take responsibility for that, too. So if ever there was a scenario here for the Republicans, perhaps once again shooting themselves in the foot because of following the arguments, if that's what they are, of the president, then this is the scenario that's working out. If I were a Republican voter in Georgia now, I'd be scratching my head about what exactly I should be doing.
Yeah, it's and the dangerous part of it, it was allocated out earlier this week when one of the people that works in the registrar of voters got out and said, "Listen, this is dangerous. We now have families that were working on the election that have police protection because of death threats."
Yes, and the wives of elected officers receiving sexualized threats from angry Trumpian supporters. The scenario that he was sketching out was deadly serious, almost literally, in fact, in terms at least of threats. I mean, there are death threats been issued to people working on the elections in Georgia, and as official zone work. It's made very clear it's got to stop. And it's got to stop because people will get hurt. People even, he said, could get killed. For a man who's self-confessedly a lifelong Republican and has given his support to the president during the last 4 years, Though, of course, working in the purely nonpartisan role of helping to run the elections, this was a remarkable statement. The man is showing a lot more courage, for instance, than political courage, that strange commodity, than a good many Republican senators in the United States Senate.
It's just you know, you look at this and you just really, it's hard to imagine, and it's so out of balance that you really haven't heard anything about the Democratic candidates are running in that Georgia election. And then you have the presidents Obama, Bush, and Clinton all saying that they'll go on TV to take this vaccination, and also Joe Biden, and the president has not come along with that either. I'm 68 years old. I've never, ever seen anything like this in presidential politics.
It's a kind of insane way to be ending the year. the year that, of course, has been dominated by that COVID question, and all these political shenanigans that are going on are, of course, taking place against the backdrop of the newest surge, and the media people like ourselves have gotten used to saying, almost as if it's a truism now, that the death rate has now reached in the United States one person per minute, and now it's pushing up towards being two people per minute, one person dying every 30 seconds. Is that what we expected that the year 2020 would be? I don't think so. The days are dwindling down now to the end of the year, and of course to January the 20th and the inauguration of a new president. And it's looking like the country has gone insane. These are extreme terms that I'm using, but it's hard not to use them given the temper of the times. The dispute over the elections still running now, when we've got something like today is actually 46 days until the inauguration of a new president, and we're still arguing, or have been arguing this past week, about the truth or otherwise, or the legitimacy or otherwise, of the election by which that president was selected. There's no doubt, of course, in most reasonable people's minds that, of course, it's President Biden, but we still have a president sitting in the Oval Office right now who's still trying to dispute it, and there are people loyally fighting with him. Fighting, I'm not sure if that's the right word either, but trying to get the result overturned. I'm thinking in particular, I hope he's listening, our old mayor of this city, our former mayor of the city, Rudy Giuliani, who's acting very clearly as the president's own personal lawyer now. And it's on this issue that I'd like to bring out our bugle fanfare, because some remarkable journalism has had to be done this week in the reporting of this issue. Can we hear it now? Yes, the bugle is being blown this week, in my mind. The fanfare of approval is not exactly for Fox News. I think it would surprise people listening to me to think that I would be according that the accolade to a network which has so clearly become the mouthpiece of this particular presidency over the last 4 years. So, of course, he's upset with them, too. Is there anyone he's not upset with? But, in fact, the accolade is not going to Fox News, but it is going to a Fox News reporter. Because one of the oddities about Fox News, which I think we do always have to keep in mind, while we do know the broad picture about Fox News and its sense of identity with this administration, it nonetheless is peopled by individual journalists who have the capacity to act very professionally. It's one of the oddities of the thing that the creature that Fox News is, that we need to accept. And I'm having the bugle blown this week for Caitlin McFaul, a very young but talented reporter in the Fox News newsroom. Along with many in her cohort, her generation, I'm not sure her exact age, but she'll be in her late 20s, I would guess. She is called, of course, a multimedia reporter. She, in this new digital age of ours, we all as journalists now have to be jacks of all trades and jills of all trades. And in her case, you know, she's very skilled some of the more technical refinements of television production. I notice on her resume she's particularly proud of handling a particular effects, visual effects program produced by the Adobe company. That's the kind of thing that would have been a world away from the skill set of a journalist in our generation, I have to say, Marshall. It's a comment on the times. It's a symptom of all the crushing work, the extra crushing work that individuals in newsrooms now have to perform, and a reflection of the resources crunch that has affected our industry and our profession. But as a result, the pressures on individual reporters are enormous. But often, even in Fox News, the individual quality of journalism can shine through, and that's what's been happening with Caitlin McFaul. She's done some very good, straight reporting on Trump's lawyer, Giuliani, appearing in front of Michigan's state legislature in his continuing effort to discredit and ultimately overturn, I guess, the election result. Michigan, you remember, went to Biden to the tune of about 154,000 votes. So it's a hapless effort. And of course, Giuliani looks, as he looks in so many instances during this fight of his, on his employer's behalf, it looks particularly hapless, a word that I see Trump is happy to use for the Georgia politicians he wants to decry. But Giuliani's hapless efforts now include trying to present to the legislature members in Michigan evidence, what he calls evidence, and I have to put very heavy air quotes around that word, evidence that the elections were somehow bungled or conspiratorially, wrongheadedly, illegally rigged, messed with, and the witnesses he's presented have looked very peculiar, and indeed one, more than one, were already tossed out of court, quite literally tossed out of court. I'm talking now about Giuliani's efforts to present them to a legislature, but these same witnesses were ruled. As lacking all credibility when these self-same accusations came to a Wayne County district court judge. The witnesses were, there's no point in itemizing their names, but the extraordinary thing, these individuals who had worked in the elections were trying to claim were just specious and dismissed as such by the judge. But here is Giuliani still working away and trying to get some kind of traction with them. And it was interesting to see, and the report by Caitlin McFaul is distinguished by just pointing it out very clearly in a very unbiased way, I have to say, in her reporting, what the weaknesses were in the case that Giuliani was presenting, and how unreliable these witnesses were, even though they were in one particular case very voluble, and Giuliani himself had to try and restrain his own witness. So a good piece of reporting, well worth our commendation, and somehow typical of the times. You know, the fact that if you get down to just reporting the truth, you'll see what's going on, but there's an awful lot of smoke and mirrors billowing around these issues, and such a lot of hot air being expended on material and arguments, which, to use the word again, are nothing but specious.
And you look, the reason Rudolph Giuliani is doing all this is, of course, he wants one of those free pardons. There's no doubt about it. So, you know, he's come.
I think you have a good point.
Yeah, he's come.
I'm not going to say that's obviously true, but I think it's pretty well obviously true, isn't it?
Well, he's come.
And I think there's been some good reporting going on about that too. Very, very reliable White House reporters, in particular from the New York Times, have, of course, they have to rely on anonymous sources when reporting out of the White House on these matters, but it's pretty damn clear from what very dogged reporting they're doing that Giuliani has been, of course, discussing the possibility of a pardon, a preemptive pardon for him, along with, interestingly, members of the Trump family themselves. And that's the kind of court, almost medieval court, it seems, that we're dealing with here.
You know, he's already lost his, you know, America's mayor. He's already in the doghouse. But what's interesting to see how the Attorney General is trying to salvage some shred of dignity as he is set to go out the door by opposing Donald Trump on this.
Yeah, it's hard not to be, you know, have a little frisson of excitement, or, you know, in a way, there's a sort of ugly kind of entertainment at work when we get the likes of Giuliani turning on the likes of William Barr, and one of those wonderful sentences that that lawyers like them will use all the time that begin with the phrase, "with the greatest of respect." In fact, Giuliani said, "with the greatest of respect to the Attorney General." He's now dismissing the fact that the Attorney General is saying that that no evidence has been found of election interference on a scale that would change the result. What kind of a scale would change the result now, I wonder? But it's clear that, yes, the members of the Trump administration are getting at each other's throats, and all the animalistic metaphors that we could bring up here would apply. I'm not going to do them on the grounds of bad taste, but it's pretty clear that there's dissent in the ranks, to put it mildly.
Dissent in the ranks, and it's as someone who is a citizen of this country, and of course you come from across the pond, you must look at this and talk to other people. What do people in the rest of the world really think now? I mean, is it as bad as it looks?
I do talk to other media people, in particular of other nations, my old home country too, where, of course, there's long been a kind of reliance on America as a country that embodies a kind of fellow feeling about what democracy is. That's always been Britain's general, I know I'm generalizing here, but in general, it has been the British attitude as it looked across the Atlantic to the way that America conducts its politics. Sometimes we've been a little appalled at the show busy feel of it compared with our slightly more somber traditions of, although we have an awful lot of pantomiming regalia and pomp and circumstance around our politics. America seems a lot more, I think many Britons would say until this latest administration that America was perhaps besuited, but not looking like some medieval pageant But it was nonetheless a lot more skewed towards the values of entertainment. I mean, I think the Reagan years planted that idea in the Brits' notion that that a Hollywood actor could become a president. Struck them as just so perfectly apt for the way that American politics have been conducted. But at the same time, they acknowledge that America is the leading has been the leading democracy in the world. Constitutional democracy matters a lot, and the example that a country as big as America and with the tradition of a constitutional democracy working as a kind of beacon to the rest of the world is something that Britain has admired, sometimes rather jealously, I think. But I think the last 4 years has changed that enormously, as it has with admirers of democracy around the rest of the world that I've talked to. I mean, people began by scratching their heads, then got steadily more and more appalled by this Trump administration. And as we dwindle now into the last dying throes of this administration, as cranky and as disgusting as its behavior is turning out to be, even to the last, I think many people in Europe, in the Far East, and in Britain are just waiting, you know, impatiently for the whole damn thing to be over. That's the predominant mood I get as I talk to my colleagues. They think of it as a bad dream, and they think it'll be over. And of course, you know, I think there's a lot of optimistic hope there that somehow or other, you know, we can just go back to the way things were. I think that's not true. I think everyone, as they sit and think about it a little bit, will realize that in some ways, the American body politic has been changed irrevocably by the experience of the Trump years. And it's not as simple as just trying to put the clock back now with a Biden administration. In many ways, that effort will be made, and a return to true values will be a phrase we keep hearing. We will keep hearing. And of course, that will be the case, but in many ways also, we are going to be stuck with the fact that something very different has been leased upon the country and leased upon the world, and that is Trumpism, and we won't be able to forget that 74 million Americans did vote for him on his way out, and that, of course, is in some ways a new part of the landscape that will be lingering with us and will have to be taken into full account.
But I think the good thing about that, showing that 74 million people voted for Donald Trump is almost 82 million voted for Joe Biden, is the fact that it is now a real fact to all Americans that this divide that has been blamed on the media for the past 4 years, creating the divide, and the divide that was blamed on President Obama for not fixing race relations. Now the real fact comes true that as far as we've come in this country, we are still a country that has serious racial and ethnic divides.
Yeah, absolutely. W.E. Du Bois said that the color line was the defining feature of the American way of life. And boy, has this 4 years finally made that abundantly clear, if ever it was in doubt. And yes, it may sound oversimplistic to some ears to say that it's all about racism and the latent racism that this president has allowed to come up, you know, unabashedly, it seems, to the surface. And maybe a great service has been rendered by doing that, and that, as you say, whatever delusions, like blaming the media, it's just one of many delusions I think we've nursed around this issue for a long time. But the truth is that it is a crucial divide in this country, and it is almost an existential divide, and has been ever since the creation of the nation, and certainly since you know, we had it crystallized before our eyes so firmly with the Civil War in the 19th century. But it's never gone away, and we have to deal with it in a much more forward-looking and much more determined way than we've managed to do in the past. The challenge is there, and let's hope that America can rise to that challenge.
David, we'll speak to you next week.
I look forward to it then.
Take care. The Media Beat with David Terechuk here on Robin Hood Radio.